But King, it's a little ring and a big ocean. How can I make sure that I find the ring?
That's your problem. That's your job. All I know is that I have to be wearing the ring on my finger in 40 days. And you are going to be in charge of finding it. I don't care if you have to empty out the whole ocean and climb inside and look under every rock and every shell in the whole ocean. You'll find me my ring. You'll find a way to get it for me. If you have to go diving yourself with all the officers, or you have to hire other divers, or whatever you have to do, you'll find me that ring. Or else I'll have your head. And the officer, of course, was very, very sad and depressed and upset because he felt that his head was getting cut off already. How can he find such a little ring in such a gigantic ocean? It's impossible. Well, he made the officers dive, and he got other divers and swimmers and even kids and anybody he could find. And he stood by the ocean day and night, getting people to dive in, even paying them money, whatever he could, to try to find the ring. And of course, they just didn't find it. And days were going by. And during this time, Kinalach, because he was so nervous, and he was so upset, he forgot all about the Rambam on the island that he had to take care of. And days went by, and he had not been out to the island to see the Rambam, to give him food, to give him anything. I completely forgot. And he was worried about the Rambam, because the Rambam had saved his life. And even though his life was in danger now, he said, I better take a little bit of time out to help the Rambam. And in the meantime, I'll continue that the divers should dive into the ocean to find the ring. Otherwise, I'm going to go and take the Rambam things and even say goodbye to him, because I think the end of my life is going to come. My head will be chopped off. And so, Kinalach, the officer, got on his boat and he starts sailing out to the island. And during this time, like we had said, the Rambam had run out of food. And he was using his fishing pole. And every day he would catch fish, and he would eat the fish. During this time, the Rambam had, one day, a big fish on the line. And he was struggling to bring in that big fish. It was the biggest fish he ever caught. Finally, he caught that big fishy, and he brought it to the island. And he cut it open to clean it out that he should be able to eat the fish. And as he cut it open, he opened up in the stomach and he saw that it was a very shiny thing in there. He took out that shiny thing and he saw this was not only a ring, a big, beautiful, royal ring of the king. And he recognized that this is the king's own ring that he signs, that he stamps the laws and all of the papers and all the gzeiros with, full of diamonds and gold. And the Rambam saw that this fish must have swallowed the ring from the bottom of the ocean. And now the Rambam caught that fish and brought him to his island. And the Rambam had the king's ring. He cleaned it off. And he put it away. And after that time, one day came the boat with the officer. And the Rambam was so happy to see him. He was so thankful that he was okay. He was so worried about him. But the officer looked terribly worried. He had gotten very thin. And he looked like something was very, very wrong. The Rambam says, "What's wrong? Where have you been? I've been so worried about you." And he says to the Rambam, "Well, I was worried about you too, but I'm sorry to say that I'm in such a terrible situation, I forgot all about you until now. And now I see you're alive. I'm thankful for that. But you should know, Rambam, I'm in serious, serious trouble. The Rambam says, tell me what's wrong. No, you have enough problems of your own being on an island. Why should I tell you what's happening with me? What could you possibly do about it anyway? The Rambam says, you never know how Hashem can help a person. Maybe you tell me what's wrong. And he started to cry like a baby. He says how the king had lost his ring and it fell into the ocean. And then the king said it's up to him to find it in 40 days and the days are almost over or else his head will be chopped off. And it's completely impossible. How could he ever find in the big ocean a small ring? And his life is over. He'll never see his family again. And everything is completely hopeless. And he was crying on the floor. He starts rolling around on the sand on the island, kicking and banging his fists into the sand, crying. He was so upset. There's no hope. There's no hope. And the Rambam says, it says in the Torah, you never give up hope. There's always a chance Hashem could help. He says, impossible, how could it be? How could I ever get that ring back? And of course, the Rambam went over to the place and he took out the ring and he put it in his hand. And he says to the officer, stop crying for a minute and wipe your eyes and take a look at this, what I have in my hand. Maybe this could help you. And the officer opened up his eyes and he saw in the Rambam's hand the ring of the king that fell into the ocean. And his eyes almost popped out of his head like popcorn. And his face turned red with excitement, as red as a... He says, I can't believe this. Am I dreaming? He pinches himself. He looks to see if he's wearing his pajamas. Am I dreaming? Could it really be that this is the king's ring? The Rambam says, yes, it is. I caught it in a fish. The fish must have swallowed the ring. And that's it. And the officer was so happy and so thankful. And he says to the Rambam, I have an idea. This is the second time you saved my life. And maybe now this will save your life too. Come back with me, back to the island, back to the land, back to the palace. The king has calmed down now. He has forgotten about what has happened with you. And even if he remembers, I have a plan that this will save your life too. And the Rambam came into the boat. They sailed all the way back to the land where the Rambam lived. And they got there on the 40th day, the day that the king was going to chop off his head of the officer if he didn't have his ring back. They were already preparing the executioner with the black suit, with the axe, with the chopping block. And the king was waiting in his palace. And all of a sudden, the officer comes into the palace. And the Rambam. And the king is very surprised. He says to the officer, where have you been? And what is the Rambam doing here? Wait, he is supposed to be drowned in the ocean. What's going on over here? And what about my ring? Because if you don't have it today, you're finished. The Rambam says, King, do you believe in miracles? Things that happen from Hashem that a person can't understand? Well, the king says, you know, I'm not really quite sure because I never see Hashem. I never saw him. So I'm not really quite sure that there really is Hashem or not. Well, King, let me tell you. I jumped off in the middle of the ocean, but I did not die. I ended up on an island in the middle of the ocean. Hashem saved my life. And there is something that we have to give you, King. And the Rambam pulled out of his pocket the king's ring. And everybody in the palace, including the ring, including the king, their eyes were popping out of their heads, so surprised. Where in the world did you get this ring? And the Rambam explained how he caught it in a fish. And Davka, that fish, came to his island. And it must have been that he was there in order to be there to save the king's ring and give it back to the king. The king was so happy and so thankful. He forgave the Rambam and he let him come back to be his doctor again. He forgave the officer and he didn't chop off his head. The king put the ring back on his finger. And the end of the story is that the king found out that Karkois had wanted to kill the Rambam because the officers of the king were jealous and hated the Rambam. And they are the ones that told Karkois to ask the king to do the Shlechta thing. And now that the king saw that the Rambam once again was very good, and the king saw once again that the Rambam saved the king and did some favor for the king, now he felt that it was very, very terrible of the other officers that they should hate the Rambam and want to kill him. And when the Rambam went back to be an officer and a doctor for the king, the other officers were so jealous and so upset that the Rambam was there. And the king didn't want the Rambam to have any more trouble. So he took all of those officers, he took away their uniforms, he took away their hats, he kicked them out of the palace, and they all had to go to work in the gas station. And that's the end of the story. Okay. Here's what happened. A certain man got a letter in the mailbox and he got very, very excited. And the letter said like this: announcing a brand new contest for all French horn players. And this man happened to be a player of the French horn. It's a certain kind of musical instrument that has got a lot of... it's like a round kind of a horn with a big bell, and it's had a very sweet sound, and it's a kind of a horn that's played, a kind of a trumpet, but it's bigger, and it's called a French horn. And this man played the French horn in an orchestra. Do you know what an orchestra is? It's like a band he played. And there was a certain place in the world that the people that liked French horn were putting on a special contest. And they invited all the best French horn players in the whole world, from all over the world. And they sent letters to them to their houses because they got their addresses. They sent letters to China, to Japan, to Russia, to England, to America, to South Africa, all over the world. And this particular French horn player got the letter and it said, come to the contest in exactly 6 months from this day, in a half a year, in a certain city. Let's say it was going to be in New York City, in a very big hall. All those who want to join the contest have to come either by plane or by ship or by car or walk or by train. And there's going to be a hotel to stay in and there's going to be places to eat. And the day of the contest, the hall will be filled with people who want to come and watch. And there's going to be judges sitting and listening and watching. And each player, each one who wants to be in the contest, is going to have a turn to play one song. He can choose whatever song he wants to play. And after the song, the judges will judge him. And of course, while he's playing the song, all the people in the audience will listen and enjoy the contest. And the judges will give points for every song, how well he plays, how nicely, how beautiful it is. There are many things the judges know how to judge. And the most points you can get is 100 points for this song. That's the best, that's the highest amount of points. And when the contest is over, whoever got the most points will be the winner of $100,000. A big prize of money, a big gigantic bag of money. And of course, he's going to have a lot of kavod from all the people that will make him famous for winning the contest. And so, the man got the letter and got very excited. And of course, all over the world, whoever got the letter got very excited. Many of them decided to come to the contest, and some of them decided not to come to the contest. And Kinelach, of course, they made it in 6 months that everyone should get ready and practice and make himself to be the best French horn player that he could be. And finally, after the 6 months, it came now the time for the contest. In the airport, planes were coming in, and on every plane was a person carrying a French horn. And people would say, "How come you're carrying that French horn? Oh, don't you know I'm going to the contest, the big contest." From China, and from Japan, and from France, from England, from South America, from South Africa, from Iceland, from Greenland, from all over the world, came French horn players. And they got taxis to the hotel, or they came, of course, by a boat or whatever way they came. And then finally came the night of the contest. The auditorium, the big hall, filled with thousands of people. They were standing in a long line outside waiting to get tickets. And everybody knew about the big contest. A lot of people came. And the contestants, that means the ones who want to be in the contest playing, each one was so excited. They had their music with them or they had it memorized. And each one was getting ready. They were nervous. They were all dressed up, of course, nice. They want to look good for the contest. And the judges got on the stage. There was a whole group of judges. And they put out a chair. One chair that each contestant, each one who tries, will go out and sit on that chair and play his piece and then leave and wait to see who's the best. And after each piece, the judges will announce how many points he gets. And so it got to be now 8 o'clock. That was starting time. They lifted up the curtains and everybody applauded. They clapped. Everybody was so excited. It was sold out. Standing room only. So many people there. And the man came out and announced, "This is the first worldwide French horn contest. And we have people from all over the world. And tonight, everyone is going to hear beautiful music from the French horn. But not only it's a concert, it is a big contest. Because the winner who gets the most points wins $100,000 prize money." And now the first one came out with his French horn, who's trying. And he played a very beautiful piece of music for the French horn. And when he finished, everybody clapped. And now they turned to the judges. And the judges wrote down on their papers points. And the leader of judges took all the papers and he read them all. And he added them all up. And he did whatever he had to do to figure out the points from all the judges. And he announces 88 points. Now, 88 points is very good, but, of course, it's not 100, it's not even 90. Well, the next player came out. He was from Yugoslavia, a faraway place. And he played a very beautiful piece. And the judges announced 90 points. Ooh, this is exciting. He got even more. And then a woman came out from Russia, because also women play this French horn. And she was all dressed up fancy schmancy. And she sat down and played also a very beautiful piece. And the judges announced 92 points. And Kinnelock, the whole night, was more and more players. Some of them got 60 points. Wasn't so good. Some of them got 85 points, which is very good. Some of them got 95, 96. One of them got 98. And one of them got 99. And finally, during the evening, Kinnelach, one man came out. And he played such a beautiful piece. It was such a mechaya to listen to. And so special, the judges gave him 100 points. And he was the only one that got 100 points. And in the end, when they announced the winner, it was the man who got 100 points. And they gave him the big bag of money, $100,000. And everybody clapped and cheered, and everybody, of course, was very curious to find out who is he and how did he be better than all the rest, because all the rest were very good, most of them were excellent, but there was something about this man that was much better, and he got 100 points. Everyone could see it. It wasn't just that the judges were, chas v'shalom, making some kind of a mistake or something. Everybody felt that he deserved 100 points. And there was a certain man in the audience, a smart man, who was not afraid to go and find out something if he wanted to find it out. And he decided he's going to go behind the stage, back through the doors by the side of the stage, and he's going to go talk to people who played the French horn. And he's going to find out what everybody else did, and then what this man did to be better. And so he went backstage, and the guard over there says, "Hey, where are you going?" He says, "I just want to talk to the people, that's all. I want to find out what made the winner win. I'm curious." "Okay, I'll let you go." And he goes backstage, and he finds a man from China, who also got a lot of points. He got 96. He says, "Excuse me, sir, what did you do to get 96 points? And the man says, "Oh, I practice and I practice and I practice every day for hours and hours. I practice so much until I couldn't practice anymore. I was so tired. And then I stopped." Well, very interesting. Then he met a man from England who got 97 points. "Excuse me, sir, you played a beautiful piece and you got 97 points. What did you do to practice? What did you do to get such a lot of points?" "Well, sir, I practiced and I practiced every day. I practiced and I practiced and I practiced until I couldn't practice anymore. Then I stopped because I was so tired. Hours and hours." And then he asked different people that got a lot of points. Each one had the same answer. They practiced in the morning, they practiced in the afternoon, they practiced at night. They practiced as much as they could until they got so tired they had to go to bed because they were so tired practicing. And everybody practiced a lot, because when you practice, you get good. And if you don't try, you don't get good. Like it says, "Yagaiti yomatsasi." Tamin, if you try very hard, you'll find something, and that's what you should believe. When you try hard, when you work for something, that's when you get it. Finally, the man found the winner, French horn man, who got the bag of money and 100 points. And he says, "Excuse me, sir, I must ask you, I'm so curious. Curious George. I'm so curious. Shh. What did you do to win the contest? Everybody else said they practiced so much. What can you do besides practicing as much as you can? And the man said, listen closely, and I'll tell you. I practiced, and I practiced, and I practiced until I was so tired, I couldn't practice anymore. And then you know what I did? I didn't go to sleep. I practiced an extra minute. I found enough koyach to practice a little bit extra. Or maybe an extra 2 minutes. But I didn't just stop when I was tired, and I didn't stop when I did all that I could. I knew that if I really try hard, I can find a little bit more to do, and a little bit extra koyach, and do just a little bit extra. And that's why I was better than all the rest, because I tried that little bit harder. Now, Kinnelok, today in learning Chumash and in Chazara, we talked about this. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the best boys, or all the boys really, they chazered over the Chumash 100 times. Not only the Chumash, the Mishnayis. Not only the Mishnayis, the Gemara. Whatever they learned, they chazered over 100 times. That's after they knew it. After they knew it and understood it, they did chazara 100 times. But that was all the boys. The best boy, how many times did he do it? 101. That extra one made him to be extra good. Just that one time extra makes all the difference in the world. The same thing us. We can learn and we can try. Sometimes we find the koyach to do that little bit extra. That little bit extra goes a long, long way. Sometimes a little bit extra goes a long, long way.